Good morning to everyone here in flesh in the University of Jyväskylä and to our viewers, hopefully around the world. My name is Jukka Jouhki and I'm senior researcher at the Department of History and Ethnology here in University of Jyväskylä. Now I have the pleasure to introduce to you our guest lecturer, Professor Florence Chi. She's Assistant Professor of Digital Communication and co-founder of the Social and Interactive Media Lab at Loyola University Chicago. Her research examines the social and ethical dimensions of our emergent digital lifestyles with a particular focus on games, social media, mobile platforms, and their effects on global labor dynamics across industrial, governmental and academic sectors. She has designed and taught graduate and undergraduate courses in digital media, including game studies, where students engage with debates surrounding gaming and their production through social justice frameworks. This month, Florence Chi is a visiting scholar with the Department of History and Ethnology here, as part of a comparative international investigation into the local context of social games design and mobile platforms. The lecture will begin in a minute and will consist of two 45-minute parts. After the first part, we will have a 15-minute break. But now, Florence, the stage is yours.
Thank you, Dr. Jouhki. Thank you all for coming to this lecture, and it's my pleasure to speak to you today about some of the experiences I've had as an ethnographer and doing local contextual research in online and offline worlds. So the title of my talk today is Sociocultural Factors in Online Gaming Contexts: Field Notes from the Edge. So let's start off with a pretty simple slide. 10. So 10 is a very significant number for today because 10 represents this significant point in time, particularly suitable for a lecture in a department of history and ethnology. This is a retrospective of the last 10 years. I represent a snippet today, but this work that I'm talking about represents the culmination of a decade's worth of research that I've done on online games in their native contexts, particularly in South Korea. I ended up in Korea doing ethnographic research, examining how online game culture manifests in daily life and how it's become so popular in a country relative to other countries where online gaming is still a marginal and geeky activity. How I ended up in Korea, however, is worth talking about. So, another slide, 30. 30 is the number of years I have been playing video games. So I've come to this topic from a perspective of love. Major milestones include Commodore 64 with games such as Archon, which you can see here. And let's start off here. You can tell by the music that it's somewhat that kind of 8-bit, really simple gaming. Let's go a little more here and show you some of the play here. Takes a while to catch up. But basically 8-bit characters. Then I moved to Nintendo console games at my friends' houses when I'd go over to play. Arcade games with a big cabinet kind of set up with the game on the screen. Then I moved to text-based BBS games. Those were online, where I'd need to connect to other people. Then I moved on to StarCraft, which is quite famous by now. Also, Warcraft 2, where I played peer-to-peer games. So you would connect to another person, maybe one. Then you move on to Battle.net, where you could play with more people, maybe four. I also dabbled in first-person shooters. Then I went on to EverQuest, which is a massively multiplayer online role-playing game, MMORPG. Something like what you know as World of Warcraft. I started to become interested in the intersection of social network games and mobile platforms. So as Dr. Yauki mentioned, my interest in games research spans industry, academia, and government. The journey of intellectual inquiry began at the sunset of the dot-com boom for me when I started working at a research organization called New Media Innovation Center. It was a collaborative venture between industry, academia, and government in order to accelerate growth in Western Canada's tech industry. I'm originally from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. I was there as part of the Simon Fraser University Social Science Research Cluster, where I was able to leverage a background in anthropology and communication to research new media. So in researching the Global Village, at one point, I was working on an online communities project that looked at certain compelling elements of game communities. Being a gamer myself, this was great. I was passionate about the research topic. Up until that point, I didn't think I could do much researching something that I loved as much as I could with games. And suddenly, worlds collided, so I was really happy about that. In terms of EverQuest, that was the main game I was concerned with at the time. I worked on questions like, what makes a compelling community online? Why do people play? What makes them stay online for so long? At the time, people were talking about these MMORPGs as something really mysterious. And once you went online, no one really talked about what actually took place. It was something that you went online and you disappeared to the rest of the world and became antisocial. I found myself coming across all sorts of information about addiction and games. This was the point at which, inspired by the ethnographic, sociological, and economic work by scholars such as Bonnie Nardi, T.L. Taylor, Edward Castronova, I approached the ethnographic study of games cultures through a communication lens and looking at MMORPGs. That is, looking at the role of media specifically while grounded in a cultural context of study. So seeing a figure, which is a thing, and ground, the context on which it resides. So looking at Marshall McLuhan, the Canadian School of Communication, looking at form and content. I interviewed people who told me that games like EverQuest, rather than make them antisocial, made them more social because of the contact they could have with other people. One went so far as to say EverQuest saved his life. He was descending into depression. So rather than be medicated with drugs, he found himself going into these worlds, socializing, blowing off steam after work. And then he found himself finding comfort in this electronic age. The big turning point in this research, looking at addiction or so-called addiction, was reading story upon story in the media about online games and their supposedly addictive nature. It's the reason, supposedly, for tragic events such as suicides and mass shootings. We don't talk about the other possible social explanations. Instead, video games provide a convenient scapegoat that the media gloms onto all too easily. So this was the rationale for my beginning these studies. The way stories were conveyed by news media and devoured by people around the world. That's why I felt I needed to pursue this research with an organization or on my own. There seemed to be more than what the media was letting on. So I wasn't satisfied with the simplistic explanations provided by the media. That inspired me to perform a broader inquiry driven by ethnographic sensibilities into the discourse of addiction, looking at how people use the word addiction to describe themselves and others. Also, the way games allowed me to do it was that I could start understanding the cultural phenomenon of addiction to a greater degree, using games to start the conversation. Because the complex relationships between social factors and technology have been simplified, dysfunctional behavior linked to interaction-rich media like games have often been blamed solely on the medium itself. So looking at online games as the one thing that is everything wrong with society. So South Korea's apparent appetite for online games in particular has been vilified by the media, in the international media and its national media at large. So as a result of such rhetoric, I pursued this study. So the guiding quote, this begins my dissertation. It's a quote by Kurt Vonnegut. "I want to stay as close to the edge as I can without going over. Out on the edge, you see all kinds of things you can't see from the center." So this decentering of myself as a games player, as from North America with North American sensibilities towards games, was key in being able to see what role games were playing in the local culture, such as South Korea's. So games and culture in South Korea specifically. Here's some sample international headlines to give you a taste for what was going on in the media with regard to South Korean games. I was astounded at how many studies on online game addiction never bothered and were never even interested in asking players personally what their motivations for participating in online games were. Often it was survey-based rather than getting at players' narratives, because somehow those narratives were seen as biased or less than objective. But I wanted to really find out what the players made of their own experiences. What about how players use games to connect with people rather than be antisocial, was interesting. I wanted to arrive at the meaning of games for the players. So it was very player-centric. It wasn't about my agenda going into a place and trying to get data from people. It was about trying to give players the space to discuss their own experiences and what they got out of engaging with these worlds. In my research of these North American game communities, I repeatedly came across what I can only call panicked articles describing the pathological level at which Korean youth were playing games. So, video gaming holds Korea in its grip, or South Korean man dies after 50 hours of computer games. South Korea's gaming addicts. And it goes on and on. This is just a sample. But also, lastly, Korean couple chose virtual baby over their own while addicted to MMORPGs. And this is so laden with panic over these games. And certainly it paints a tragic picture. It paints a terrible case. But if you looked into that story, there was more going on, of course, than just gameplay, and there often is. So to me, the direction of my research would be clear. My study would take me to Korea, from North America to Korea. I wanted to see what the real deal with Korea was. Was there something underneath the surface of all this panic in the media, of youth losing themselves in these worlds, of a nation comprised of online game addicts? And so this is a little snippet from CBS, a television station in the United States. Why is it so dark here? Okay.
Sports fans in South Korea are cheering a new generation of competitors. Call them e-athletes. From Seoul tonight, Barry Peterson.
So the chairs.
These are the athletes of the 21st century. Gladiators with nationwide TV audiences. Names like Emperor or God of Destruction. And screaming fans a rock star would envy. Their implements of battle, a nimble mind, and two players squaring off on a computer game. The most popular is StarCraft, a war game where players build bases and launch attacks using tactics like reconnaissance or deception that would challenge Napoleon. It ends with one side destroyed.
The feeling I have when I win a competition is indescribable.
Lee and others call themselves professional athletes, playing for one of 12 teams. The best earn hundreds of thousands of dollars and have fans who swoon for an autograph.
I like his playing style. I really love him.
At home or in the 26,000 cyber cafes, online gaming is a national pastime. So many people play because so many people can. This is the most wired nation in the world. 94% have broadband compared to about half in the United States. The Turning Pro is not fun and games. At Team LeCaf, they eat here, sleep here, and train from 11 a.m. until 2 a.m. 7 days a week. Dedication that leads head coach Joo Ong Cho to predict that someday his athletes will be as well known as A-Rod or Tiger Woods. So parents, if you want your kids to be rich and famous in this century's new sport, you'll have to make those hated computer games the new homework. Barry Peterson, CBS News, Seoul.
So that was just a little snippet of the celebrity culture that exists in Korea regarding games. Now, this is really different from other parts of the world, again, where gaming is something to be done in secret, perhaps. When I've asked people about their gaming activities, they kind of are a bit shy about it initially, to admitting that they are gamers, for sometimes fear that they'll be mistaken for someone who's antisocial or marginal. But these guys in Korea are celebrities. They're akin to F1 car racers in the United States. They are given corporate sponsorship by companies such as Samsung and LG and Hyundai. So all the major companies are in on the games industry in South Korea. And that is something really different from other parts of the world. So that was just a little snippet in the news about how players can train to be pro gamers. So actually do it for prize money. These players are celebrities, so they date supermodels. They're in the tabloids, being discussed as objects of gossip. And in the latest movies, documentary State of Play, they cover the celebrity pro gamer culture in Korea wonderfully. And T.L. Taylor has a book on esports that covers this industry very well. So knowing I wanted to go to Korea and see what all this was about firsthand, of course, it included participant observation. This is the requisite method slide. But really, the participant observation is so crucial to understanding the broader culture, in addition to what is compelling about just the games themselves. And so I went to PC bangs, PC game rooms, which are very prevalent in South Korea, and especially so 10 years ago when I first went. Now that number has tapered off because of the increasing number of portable devices, mobile games. So those platform changes have changed the way South Koreans game as well. But this is how I started out with. I went to professional game competitions and tournaments. So I watched players compete for prize money. I did a homestay in Korean households. I endeavored to learn Korean, how to speak and read and write by taking intensive language classes at night during the coursework stage of my master's back in the day. I managed to arrange a stay with a Korean family who was very welcoming to me. In the summer of 2004, I finally left Vancouver for Seoul with an intermediate knowledge of textbook Korean and my tape recorder. I vaguely and abstractly knew that 4 months later, which was the period of my stay, I would come away with some interesting and unexpected findings, but I didn't expect it to stray too much from the research I had done in North America. I was trying to be open-minded, though, and honestly, I thought I would find a confirmation of my original thesis from the research I had done on EverQuest, that games in their various forms allow people to construct community, and this was the reason for their increased engagement in computer games. As one might be able to surmise from the concerns I brought up in this work, I was able to comprehend and sympathize to a great degree with Korean youth because I was living there, and that was paramount. Many of my experiences inside and outside of my family life in Korea provided a lot of subtext for the behaviors I observed during this research. Each day, I'd do my field notes, thick descriptions of what I encountered whenever possible. This reflexivity and ability to talk about what I was perceiving was important to study as a whole. And learning about where I was situated within the grand scheme of Korean society was interesting as well. As a female at that time in my mid-20s, living in an urban, high-rise, three-generation home, I was immediately dealing with what it was like to be a member of the youngest generation in a household. When I returned the second time to do a stay, that was during my PhD period, that was my late 20s, and upon my most recent visit in my early 30s, each had its own experience and implications because of where I was and where my informants were in their life stages. It allowed me to analyze Korean youth, access it, reflect upon it, and write about it. And given what I found, it's very difficult to view games or game theory without looking at the cultural context of implementation. What I ended up finding was very different from what I initially thought I would. I found so much more than I initially and arrogantly anticipated, so much so that what I'll share today is just the tip of the iceberg in my ethnographic findings. They're representations of what I observed and synthesized in order to share knowledge coming back from the fieldwork. Overall, the broader message of what I'm trying to convey, what I have been trying to convey about Korea and games, is that Korea is not this mysterious other to be exoticized and feared as a nation of game addicts, as it's portrayed in the media. With so many social, cultural, and historical factors to consider, an analysis of those without those elements is gravely at a deficit, and I'll continue to pound that drum for as long as I can. Yet it's what most analyses of new media tend to entail, and why I really espouse an ethnographic, qualitative approach to the study of online gaming contexts. So in order to answer these questions, I suggest that an in-depth look at the culture, social structure, and infrastructure cast Korea's reputation for online gaming in a different light and yields alternative explanations. To this effect, the objective of the ethnographic research was to dig deeper beyond statistics and a priori assumptions into Korean life in order to provide more cultural context and possible reasons for why gaming environments seem so particularly immersive and compelling in Korea. My argument is that looking at just the game itself prevents us from looking at the bigger picture of how a society responds to electronic media in general. This is consistent in communication thought. Once books were evil because they were new compared to oral cultures. Television was once evil. It might still be evil. But with every new form of media, it's comic books, romance novels, the internet in general, not just online games. There's always a suspicion with a new form of media that it's going to be the demise of society. Cultural artifacts such as technologies, like television or video games, have different meanings, though, and I feel like it's my job to look at what meanings people assign to their use in that culture. So in the rise of Korean gaming, I analyzed the intricate relationship between these social and cultural factors at work in Korean game communities and the context in which games have become integrated into everyday life in South Korea. As the news clip mentioned, the nation's a world leader in broadband penetration rates and has a notoriously high number of resident online game players. Over half play online games of one sort or another, even if they're casual. And if they're casual, they might not even say that they game, so those numbers might actually be higher. The reasons for people gaming in Korea continue to contribute to much speculation in industry, academic, and government sectors. Everyone knows that it happens, but people don't really look at why, and it's like an octopus. It's like a hydra. It just has so many heads and tentacles that it's hard to hammer down exactly why that is. And I'm not trying to single-handedly do this, but be able to use a different method to point at some possible reasons why this might be the case. Gamers in Korea have made these headlines with reports on their fascination with games, their real-life social activities such as school, suffering because of their addiction to game parlors, PC bangs, general video game addictions, and even cases of internet-related deaths. So playing for 84 hours straight, dying of a heart attack, things like that. But I'm not sure that the world should be basing their judgments on this sensational collection of stories. Certainly there are other more constructive users of technologies than destructive users. So what is the problem? My study in Korea allowed me to explore the second part of my dissertation, which was looking at the socio-technical transformation. So in my findings, I talked about the factors contributing to the rise of Korean gaming. the mainstream youth practices, and how games provide an opportunity for actually upward mobility in Korea. So being able to improve one's social standing and do a job that is enjoyable and perhaps fulfilling. These findings show that there are quite logical reasons, actually, for the prevalence of online game culture in Korea that don't really have to do much with the classic panic over addiction or what game they're playing or even being a caricature of a nation of those crazy Asians, which I have also heard. The results of this case study in Korea indicated increased participation in games has just as much, if not more, to do with one's life. Imagine that. There were distinct differences in the factors that determine participation in online game communities. So these factors were not influenced by the game, but rather the social, cultural, political, and economic context particular to Korea. So here I talk about the 1997 Asian economic crisis as particularly pivotal and presenting a crisis and opportunity, and I'm linking it to the situation of games in Korea. 1997 was a pivotal year because, for one, the nationwide broadband policy in Korea had taken effect. So this is too much to do with infrastructure, not games yet. But the Asian economic crisis, or what Koreans typically call the IMF period, saw widespread layoffs in the entire country. So all of the workers who were employed by companies like Samsung, LG, Hyundai, they experienced widespread layoffs, and so you had a bunch of skilled labor without much to do. This was correlated with a rash of entrepreneurial activity. So PC bungs, few computers in a room, didn't take much to start that kind of business. So that led to the increase of PC bungs all over South Korea. And so this could be born then on a large scale. Culture. So Korea itself has been a site of mental and physical national flux, acceleration and disruption. We're just beginning to figure out how technologies, which have been essentially airdropped into Korea, are affecting the daily life of individuals within society. It really is a case where the transformation has been so stark from a primarily agrarian society to an industrial society to an information economy that looks the way it does now, only within the last 50 years. And broadband infrastructure has only quickened that pace, as Manuel Castells talks about. So as a cultural group, as Nick Yee has talked about, Koreans have been found to spend a lot more time nurturing social networks than what is common in a country like the United States. So the tendency to nurture social relations is very much valued by Koreans of all ages, but for youth, the choice has been increasingly limited to only a select few activities, which include gaming. Between schooling, and then schooling, and then schooling, and more schooling, which dominates the better part of a day. And sometimes there's barely enough time to sleep. The adolescent in contemporary Korea finds not much solace aside from what is associated with online gaming. The PC bungs themselves acted as a site, as a go-between school and home. For youth, the choice is between participating in gaming activities or stay away and not have physical social interaction with people, online or offline. The youth I interviewed for this study talked about their online activities in relation to obligation and duty. So it's not just frivolous or a hobby or just a trivial pastime, but they belong to guilds. They promised times that they would meet online to play with their guild or clan or band of blood brothers. It's rare that interviewees talked about any game on its own merits, about the game, as the motivation for logging on. There are more fun games or less fun games, but mostly it was about the friends. So I let the data come to me. What the interviewees talked about was what I gathered, and they were very much about the social aspects. It's also interesting to note that the stakes were not the same for females, as expectations were very different according to one's gender. For example, I would ask some people I was interviewing and playing with, I mentioned earlier that I play StarCraft, and I was okay at StarCraft in North America. And in Korea, I really sucked. Because in Korea, the number of hours that players clocked in practicing was that much more. And it was life. And some of these players were on these competitive ladders, and I was basically lost. And I was beating myself up about this. And they said, oh, no, it's okay, you're a girl. And so there's still this pervasive attitude about it's enough that females play, you know, but the criteria for skill is still regarded differently. So here are some other pictures, just so you have an idea of what these players may look like while they're playing the professional circuit. So they're competing one-on-one. Sometimes they're like presented as celebrity professional athletes with all their specifications, like the height, age, and girls have posters and they're screaming for these guys. And this might all happen in a plaza or mall where you can do a number of things like go have a bite to eat, go see a movie, take in a pro game tournament. All these things can happen at the mall. Social structure. So the PC game room, or PC games in general, served a number of functions that I made note of. So during the point where there was widespread unemployment, a number of workers would go to pass the time at these PC game rooms. So they would leave their homes and spend the day there instead of going to an office to work. So sociality with different strata. Games are a remarkable hierarchy leveler. So it's akin to going to play golf with your boss. So if you go play games with your boss, you can do different things that you wouldn't do in the everyday work hours. So you can play with your boss, you can just have all this irreverence that would be unacceptable otherwise. Confucianism was adopted in Korea as an ideology in the 1400s by King Sejong. This ideology explicitly privileges the older over the younger, and to a certain extent, male over female. And these aspects permeate so many aspects of Korean life. Work, school, there are hierarchies everywhere, even the way the language is set up between intimate, informal, polite forms, and formal. There are at least four different ways of speaking to someone in language and grammar in itself. So that was beneficial to learn about the Korean language. So infrastructure, within a relatively short period of time, Korea has become completely wired. So it has the world's highest penetration of high-speed internet usage still. And Canadians are also keen online game players, but we rank fifth in the world in terms of high-speed internet penetration, and the U.S. is eighth. And so the respective to the world's online game industry, too, it's a multi-billion-dollar-a-year business. So the fact that games are increasingly able to be regarded as a cultural industry is something that's different. So, gaming as mainstream youth practice. As I mentioned, Korean gamers are not, as Robert Putnam talks about in his book, bowling alone. Bowling alone as in not engaging civically, not participating in everyday life. Rather, it's the opposite, where people are going to these PC game rooms to participate in a sort of social environment with very few choices outside. There's esports, which I've discussed, and also military service is an interesting aspect that I did not expect to encounter. But rather, when I interviewed people about their gaming practices, I found out that some of these guys in their mid-20s were just fresh off of a compulsory military service that all Korean men must serve for 2 years and 2 months. So imagine in your early 20s taking off for 2 years and cutting off your social interactions with the friends you used to know. You can write letters. You can have a few days of vacation, but generally the army is your life. So they would come back into broader society after serving this military service and find themselves at the PC bungs. They were sometimes passing time, sometimes reacquainting with their old friends, and it became kind of like a reintegration into society. Also, it's a way to earn money. This item bay, at the time, was really instrumental in virtual item sales. So you could get virtual items online and sell it for real money, kind of like eBay. So item bay is a play on the eBay world, eBay word. Players can sometimes supplement their part-time income, making maybe $100 US per week. And many of the youth are not working or living with parents. So this was a really attractive prospect. And I couldn't ignore this because making money in online worlds was a legitimate way to supplement their lifestyles. And it wasn't necessarily about the game then either. So is it online game addiction, or is it actually a way of being together for a new generation of Koreans? This is just Koreans like watching the competitive game tournaments taking place. So as I mentioned, the games industry is also a way for Koreans to experience upward mobility or to work towards upward mobility. Because of the economic pressures, schooling pressures, careers, there are all these issues, military service, and women in the games industry. Here, the woman issue is really interesting because here at the PC game room, there's a picture of a woman smoking. This is during the middle of the night. And what you don't see is ashtrays in women's bathrooms. Smoking in general outside in public is a taboo for women, as opposed to men who are free to smoke in the everyday. And if they don't smoke before military service, they might smoke after military service. So these are the issues that are outside of gaming. But in the PC bung, in a more permissive atmosphere, women go there sometimes to smoke freely. And here is one of those pictures. Here are more pictures from the PC bungs. There's nothing special, but like... that's special. That's a couple zone, which you can't really see here. But there are love seats, kind of like these two chairs right here, where people will sit beside one another and play games. So you can go on a date and go someplace warm together, have a soda or ramen. They have lots of instant ramen there. And in a culture where it's not acceptable to bring your date back home to see your parents in a small apartment, it's normally taking place at environments like this. So here's another picture of the competitive spectator esports. So after outlining how I went about this study, hopefully you've seen a comprehensive picture of online game hype and identity in Korea. You know, I used it to provide extra insight into the motivations to excel at digital games, and it's a strong driver of community membership. So what does this mean for game designers who want to design an addictive game when the context matters so much? You can design a fun game, a great game, but there are no guarantees about whether or not players will become addicted because of the other factors for why they might choose to play the game or that may enable or disable their engagement. There are also policy implications. So the idea that video game players can be treated for game addiction or medicated in some cases is immensely troubling and perpetuated in the broader media as the basis for policy decisions. And this is most troubling, and I hope that... this research plays a small part in troubling that conviction that online games are something that should be regulated and treated in the same way that a controlled substance addiction might be. And so ultimately, I quote Clifford Geertz here, who's a near and dear anthropologist. A scholar can hardly be better employed than in destroying a fear. And part of what drives me in this research is to destroy the fear associated with engaging in online games and what risks it presents to those who play. Thank you.